Gordon Edwards, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
So this historic agreement is getting black and white reaction, those for it and those vehemently opposed. On this containment of Iran's nuclear program, what do you make of the agreement?
Well, in many ways, it is a wonderful agreement because it really addresses the question of how do you make an atomic bomb? And the only way you can make it is to have what's called a primary nuclear explosive. And there's only two materials that fit that category. One of them is highly enriched uranium. That means over 20% enriched. And the other one is plutonium, which is produced in a nuclear reactor. And what this deal does is it closes off the door to both those materials. Iran cannot produce those materials. In fact, they have agreed to keep the enrichment way down, even below 4% enrichment, which is nowhere close to what you need for a bomb. So they cannot produce weapons-grade uranium, according to the deal. Also, they cannot produce plutonium because all of the irradiated nuclear fuel has to be returned to other countries. It cannot stay in Iran. It cannot be what they call reprocessed to extract the plutonium. So from the point of view of the shutting off the pathways to an atomic bomb, I think it's a very good deal. As a matter of fact, if this deal were made universal on other countries around the world, we'd be well on our way towards eliminating nuclear weapons worldwide. But unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be in the prospect.
But yet people are still criticizing these limits. They say
they're criticizing these limits for a couple of reasons. Number one, there's a question of time. Is this really just buying time? This deal seems to be closing the door to the acquisition of nuclear weapons materials for a period of time, let's say 15 years or at least 10 years. Which is certainly better than nothing, and it certainly does allow for a reduction of the immediate threat. For example, just recently, if you go back a couple of years, Iran was considered to be only 2 to 3 months away from building an atomic bomb. Now, even if they decided to violate all the agreements, let's say 1 year from now, they would be at least a year away from building a nuclear bomb. So, compared with the situation of a couple of years ago, this is far better. The difficulty here, however, is that there's two things going on. One is that Saudi Arabia and Israel are concerned about not only about Iran's nuclear program, but about its role in the Middle East. And lifting the sanctions will give tens of billions of dollars to the Iranian regime, which have been frozen. And that means that they will be better able to, be both an economic force and also a military force in the Middle East. And because they represent the largest Shia population, the Sunni states such as Saudi Arabia and the Jewish state of Israel are very concerned about its aggressive behavior, not just in the nuclear domain, but in other domains. And that's part of the reason for their unhappiness with this deal.
Well, some people, again, the criticisms about the limits when in actual fact they wanted the program eliminated altogether. Was this reasonable?
Well, you know, there is a double standard at work here because when you look at the people sitting around the table, the six other nations who were making this deal with Iran, they virtually all have nuclear weapons of their own. And even Israel, which is on the sidelines, has its own nuclear weapons. So if you're going to say that nuclear weapons are unthinkable in the hands of Iran, then I think you have to go further and say, well, nuclear weapons should be unthinkable in anybody's hands, and we really have to work towards meeting our international legal obligations to eliminate nuclear weapons worldwide. Now, if the Iranian deal were to set a goal of over the next 10 years working for a total abolition of nuclear weapons, this would indeed be working towards a peaceful world. But Israel itself and Canada, in fact, fought against the idea of a nuclear weapons-free Middle East, declaring the Middle East a nuclear weapons-free zone. So I think one has to be careful to simply point the finger at one country, dangerous as it may be, aggressive as it may be, and for all reasons which we all know, and not look at the larger picture.
President Obama said the deal was not built on trust, but on verification.
Yes.
What about these verifications? Are there enough checks and balances?
The procedures are remarkable in their detail. The IAEA inspectors will have much unfettered access, 24/7, as they call it, to the key facilities in Iran, which are most capable of producing nuclear weapons materials eventually. And they will be prevented from producing such materials. There are two worries. One is, what do you do about covert facilities? And there is, even in the agreement, there is even provision for that, that if there are covert facilities, then a committee of eight, including the parties to this agreement, can declare that these facilities have got to be looked at and they have to be opened up also to inspection. So
there has
never been an agreement which has greater detail in terms of the inspections which are supposed to be allowed. And if there is a violation and refusal to agree with these inspections would be considered a violation, then the sanctions are automatically snapped back. And that is also built into the agreement. So it's remarkable in its detail.
I'm surprised there isn't an acknowledgement of the surrender on Iran's behalf.
Well, it's a two-way street. You see, one of the things that there has been in place is an embargo on conventional arms trade with Iran, and that's going to be lifted after about 5 years, according to this agreement. And that's disturbing to people who regard Iran as a danger and as an aggressive force in the Middle East. But that was partly because Russia and China are eager to sell arms to Iran, and because their agreement was essential for this deal to work. And so the U.S. did give in on that. They said, okay, for at least 5 years, we want to make sure that Iran is not pursuing or cheating or having any kind of surreptitious or clandestine program in place. Then we will allow conventional arms deals to resume, just as they are with all other countries, including Israel. Of course, Israel and all other countries make arms deals all the time. So I think the real problem here is not with the deal itself. I think the deal is a very good deal. But what's lacking is a global strategy for demilitarizing not just Iran, but the Middle East in general, and for eliminating the nuclear threat, not just in Iran, but in the Middle East and really in the whole world. And that's not being addressed.
Let's just talk about these covert facilities. How would they be discovered if, in fact, they are covert?
Well, one of the things that is guaranteed in this agreement is complete 100% surveillance of the supply chain. That means the uranium mines, the uranium enrichment facilities, the uranium. So without uranium, you cannot build any bomb of any description whatsoever. So although they could have a covert laboratory somewhere where they were playing around with theoretical designs, such as has happened in various countries, they wouldn't have the materials to work with because the supply chain is under complete surveillance, according to this agreement.
And, of course,
but
here
they could be doing covert work of a more theoretical nature. And one of the real concerns for the future, and this doesn't apply only to Iran either, is that advances in it. Right now, your listeners may not be aware of the fact that uranium enrichment is a very, very slow process. It doesn't happen quickly. It takes a long time to get highly enriched uranium. And so when you only allow enrichment to 4%, then you know that it's going to take a long time to get up to 90%, even under the worst of circumstances. So
why is that?
The enrichment level low is a key feature of this agreement.
Can you explain a little bit more about that in as layman's terms as possible?
Well, the reason why is because there are two types of uranium which are almost like identical twins. But one of them is the explosive type. It's called uranium-235. And in natural uranium, when you take it out of the ground, it represents less than 1% of the uranium that you take out of the ground. The other 99% is uranium-238, which cannot be used at all to make a bomb. So enrichment is a process of gradually increasing the concentration of uranium-235 compared with uranium-238. And the reason this is so difficult is because the uranium-238 and the uranium-235 are virtually identical. The only difference is that the U-238 is just a tiny bit heavier. So the only way you can separate it is by a long process. That's why they have these centrifuges. You know, centrifuges are good for separating lighter elements from heavier elements. But because they're so close in weight, it's very slow. Like, they've got 19,000 centrifuges in Iran, and even that is hardly enough to be able to enrich slowly, bit by bit, year, month by month, gradually getting the enrichment higher and higher to the point where you can have an explosive type of uranium. That's why it's so slow. Now they're reducing the number of facilities. Here's what they're doing in the agreement. They're reducing the number of centrifuges from 19,000 down to 5,000. That makes it that much, much harder to get up to the magic number. Also, they're taking out of operation the most advanced centrifuges, the ones that are really needed to go all the way to weapons-grade uranium. So the 5,000 centrifuges, which will continue to operate, will be under constant surveillance, and they will only be used to enrich up to 3 point something. I forget the exact percentage, but it's under 4%. Now, the only other way you can make a bomb is by irradiating nuclear fuel in a nuclear reactor, and one of the byproducts of that will be a new material, doesn't exist in nature, called plutonium. But that has to be separated by a very kind of a difficult chemical operation, robotic chemical operation called reprocessing, and they're not allowed to do that. So they're not even allowed to keep the irradiated fuel, so they can't even be tempted to take the plutonium out of it because they won't have it.
So what do you say to those critics who call this deal one of appeasement?
I would say, look at the alternative. The alternative is that they were just 2 or 3 months away from the bomb, you know, and if there were no deal, they would just go ahead, or there would be a violent war breaking out with military attacks to try and prevent them from doing what they're bent on doing. The difficulty here is that, you know, other countries, let's take India and Pakistan, for example. India and Pakistan both have nuclear weapons, right? And yet they're both treated as allies. They're not treated as pariahs on the international scene. So not only Iran, but other countries in the Middle East are saying, well, look, if some countries can have nuclear weapons and nobody thinks it's such a bad thing, then why can't all countries have nuclear weapons for the same reason? Why can't we in particular have nuclear weapons? So I think that if the nuclear weapons problem is confined to a single state like Iran, there's no way we can solve the problem except by buying some time. But the question is, how do we use that time when we buy it? The only way to make the world really safe from nuclear weapons is to get rid of all of them. And by the way, this is a legal obligation on the part of all the powers that have signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty, that they are legally obliged to get rid of their nuclear weapons, but they haven't done so.
Now, it's not necessarily great news for Canada, and of course Canada has maintained sanctions. Here's another oil exporter entering the market, guaranteeing prices will remain low for some time to come.
Well, that's true. That's, of course, an economic consideration, which is going to affect Canada's economy and other economies as well. But once again, I think the root causes of these things have got to be addressed by the world as a whole. And I do believe that that the world as a whole is kind of sleepwalking towards Armageddon, in the sense that we're not dealing with the root causes of these problems. And as long as we allow nuclear technology to be legitimized, then you're going to have a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. In fact, it's already shaping up. Saudi Arabia is going to want to have the same thing that Iran has. Other countries are going to want to have the same thing. And inevitably, we're headed towards a world where either all countries have nuclear weapons or no country has nuclear weapons.
Gordon Edwards, thank you for telling me about it.
My pleasure. Thank you.